I received your invitation, young Avatar. Our showdown, while inevitable, is premature. Although it would be the simplest thing for me to take away your bending right now, I won't. You'd only become a martyr. Benders of every nation would rally behind your untimely demise. But I assure you, I have a plan. And I'm saving you for last. Then you'll get your duel. And I will destroy you.
Welcome back to the Bitter Dearth podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. My name is Sam Stanish, and with me as always is the man who's never afraid, never a coward when it comes to my challenges to our one-on-one duels, Derek Reining.
Yes, I'm always there, you know, with like 10 or 20 of my besties, you know, just in case, completely defying the rules that were established very clearly from the start, you know, just to give you a little jolt.
Yeah, well, you're the villain, so villains don't play by the rules.
So true.
And with us today is an esteemed guest, a leading, one of the most famous inventors in the entire world, a captain of industry, Michael LeClaire.
Hello, 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 hello.
Michael, hello, 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 hello. How are you today?
I'm good. I did get shat on by a bird this morning, so I feel like it has to be uphill from here, hopefully.
I've been told that that is good luck.
Yes, we'll see. We'll see.
I think that's just something you say to someone who has bird shit on them to make them feel better.
Yeah.
And I don't.
It didn't help.
As you guys know, but perhaps listeners of the podcast don't, I just moved into a new apartment. And when I got here, there's a backyard area. And when I first got here, when you go out into the backyard, immediately on the floor in front of the door was a dead bird.
Oh.
Which, if bird poop is good luck, like, I feel like bird carcass has to be like 7 years of good luck.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not some horrible Shakespearean portent of disaster.
No, I feel like it's more of a it died so that I could live in this apartment scenario.
Or, you know, maybe there's like a friendly neighborhood cat that's going to be bringing you presents, you know, a dead bird. Maybe one day you'll get like a gold bar or something, you know.
Whoa.
That makes so much more sense. I was just envisioning that it like flew into the door and it died.
As someone who has just watched the most recent Conjuring movie, I would for sure take that as a sign that the place is hella haunted.
I'm going to go with good vibes. I think that it can only go up from here, like Michael was saying, sort of one bird died and now nothing else will die here.
That sounds like science to me.
That's the goal, really, to have nothing die in your apartment.
Fingers crossed.
I don't have any plants yet, so nothing to test how that's going to pan out. But we are here to talk about chapter four of book one of Legend of Korra, which introduces the Asami Sato. I hope that my two E's in the came across. It is, you know, what a powerful, powerful introduction episode.
Absolutely. We get a full-on Fooly Cooly reference with the moped colliding with someone. Can't think of a better way to introduce a gay icon than through horrible driving.
True.
And just her stunning beauty that, you know, completely distracts Mako from suing her pants off, right? Like,
yeah, that was the move for sure, right?
Just
absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, I feel like when you're in college, there's memes that go around that are like, I wish one of the university's buses would hit me so that I wouldn't have to pay tuition anymore. And like, literally, he got hit by the richest woman in the world. And so, like, you know, you've got it made at that point.
Right. Yeah, that loser just settled for a dinner at a place that looked poorly lit.
True, but apparently is one of the most fancy restaurants in the entire country.
Mm-hmm. He also got a makeover. Let's not forget about that.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worth it. I didn't know a new scarf that he rejected. Yeah, can't forget that.
We're just getting these little trickles of Mako backstory every episode. This is the most important scarf in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Well, Michael and the three of us became friends, I feel like, right when Legend of Korra was airing. Like, I was friends with both of you sort of like separately, and then after senior year of high school, like, Korra started airing, and like, we were all engaged in the Tumblr fan community, to give background. Is that an accurate recollection of mine?
Yeah, that sounds correct, yes.
Yeah.
And so Michael is one of our friends who has been in these fandom streets with us, much like Mako was in the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get a lot of focus on Mako being in the street, not much on Bolin this episode either. Even though he does have a really cute moment of like, is this guy bothering you, Queen? Like, cute little moment for Bolin there.
Like, yeah, good 5 seconds of comic relief, but tragically, there's not enough Bolin in this episode for me.
It's true. Yeah, so is Asami one of your faves, Michael? I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I have no words to express how much I love her and all the things she does and her impact as an inventor on the world, you know?
Oh. Yeah, hashtag women in STEM.
Exactly.
She started that.
And she looks so good doing it. She makes it look easy.
Because it is for her. Because she has so many resources, obviously.
Right. Yeah, like, she's definitely one of the privileged people. This is the second time we've met a character that has a last name. Toph Beifong and now Asami Sato. Rich people get legacies in the Avatar universe.
They do. Unfortunately for Toph, her legacy is cops.
True.
And Asami's legacy is capitalism. So
yeah.
Well, like, look, they are still rich people. Like, that's what they do.
Yes, they plant seeds of evil, but they look fierce doing it, and we can't help but stand when Lin Beifong shows up and tells you you deserve nothing and then leaves.
And she's absolutely correct. She is.
Not a lie was told. Sorry, Korra.
Yeah, it's also weird now, because like, in the moment when I was watching it, like, obviously I knew who Lin Beifong was because I had rewatched the episodes that were available like a bunch of times in the weeks between all the episodes coming out. But like, to have her just in that one moment in this episode after not seeing her since the first episode is so bizarre. Like, she's like nowhere to be seen and then comes in just to like throw shade and then leave again.
Well, you know, if there's one thing that we can say about Korra, Legend of Korra, as a series, right, it's that it is inconsistent, right?
Do you know that TikTok audio from Dance Moms where Holly is like, was it perfect? Was it amazing? Nope. No, it wasn't any of those things, but it sure was entertaining. It's like, that is Legend of Korra.
I'm just thinking of that one Tia Coffee confessional from Drag Race. She's like, am I wearing a garment? Yes. Is it on my body? Yes.
Running? No. Perfect? No. Mm-hmm. Adequate? Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's I guess a good way to put it. But I do, I really like this episode. I thought it was fun. It's kind of like a more serious take on the Nightmares and Daydreams episode of Avatar in a way, just because we do start with this dream sequence that does not involve any surrealism at all, which is kind of new for the series, and is just plain terrifying.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's like it's very good at showing what we've been talking about, how like Korra, even though Avatar The Last Airbender would like delve into deeper emotional issues with their characters, I feel like it was a lot more implication, and like, you sort of, it wasn't all set out directly in the episode all the time. And then in this episode, it's like really getting into the fears and talking specifically about Korra's fears and how, like, if she can't bend, she really is nobody, or like, that's how she sees herself. And it like just clearly shows it really good at setting up the antagonism between her and Amon, because I guess I didn't think about it last week and maybe we talked about it, but like, yeah, like her greatest fear is losing her bending because she's the Avatar. And if she doesn't have that, she also doesn't have the spiritual side of it. And so it's just like, this is a good enemy power for her to go up against, because her whole identity is being a really good bender and not being afraid.
Right, exactly. In this episode, she says she's never felt this way before. So this is like a brand new emotion for her. And she's also facing new challenges for not only herself, but for like the Avatar in general. We've talked about this idea of like the Avatar having to be a celebrity now. This is a new thing, but also add on top of it that Korra, like we said, has, like, she grew up around maybe 10 people. She just is not used to dealing with other human beings. So it's double homicide, as the meme goes.
Something else I really noticed that stuck out to me in this episode is sort of this idea of how Korra is kind of swayed very easily because she is trying to figure out how to like build her own path forward, it seems, where she, you know, initially she's resistant to Tarlok asking her to join, but then she kind of reconsiders it and gets sort of pushed into it where maybe she didn't necessarily need to do that.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, even after she's like given the advice by Tenzin, like, be on guard, he's gonna pull some shit, it's like she just can't help herself, because one, she's 17, 16 at this point, right, in the show. She's also like, that's just her personality. She is very off the cuff, not gonna think things through before she does it. Like, it's so Tarlok knows this clearly and plays into it very well. And that's another thing, we're introduced to another new character and a villain, probably. I think we can all just like call
yeah.
him that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So this episode is also the first of Tarlok's, and he is a member of the like Republic City Council that Tenzin serves on. And I guess it's for these four people who represent the different bending communities that are in Republic City. And now Tarlok is gonna like create a task force to fight the non-bender threat, just a setup for anybody who's listening.
Right. I think it's like the water tribes get one each. Like there's a northern southern representative, and Tarlok represents the south, I believe.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So it's interesting that we're kind of getting another, like the first evil, quote unquote, like water tribe person since Hama, I guess. Even though he hasn't really done anything outwardly evil other than be a counter-revolutionary who beats the living hell out of civilians.
You can tell he's evil. I mean, Ikki, you know, Ikki catches on.
anybody who Tenzin distrusts is evil to me.
Exactly. Ikki comes through with the microaggressions pretty hard. You smell like a lady, pigtail man. Like, she really toes the line there of calling him a slur of some sort.
Yeah. I mean, like, she's femphobic, she hates his hair, it's not a good look for our girl.
But also, she's allowed to. She can say it,
yeah.
And
oh,
she
yeah.
should say it.
Right. It's Pride Month, she can do whatever she wants.
Look,
no objections here.
I'm happy with her calling him a fag, I just wouldn't want her to, you know, say anything, any racial microaggressions, which is how the hair stuff reads to me.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, don't do that, Ikki. But fortunately, I feel like every airbender just has chaotic bi energy, no matter what. And I think Ikki exemplifies that the most of any character.
Yes, I think that's entirely correct.
I think one of my favorite parts about Avatar The Last Airbender, and we talked about it a lot, is when characters would get new outfits. And this episode was stellar for giving us new outfits on the characters, because Mako gets the makeover, Korra and Tenzin and Milo go and get really super dressed up, and they look so nice. Korra's in the little like task force battle mode armor, which looked so cool. Just really appreciate all the different designs that were in this episode.
And then Lin Beifong shows up in her police uniform.
So it's very Parks and Rec, the doctor who shows up in his scrubs. Like, she's just always wearing that.
Yes.
Yeah, as she should, honestly. It's a great look for her, honestly.
Well, we haven't seen her in a while. They really need us to remember who she is.
That is also fair. And there's a lot of Bobs running around, like people with like short hair. So it's like she could be anyone if we didn't like see her in her regalia.
Great word.
Thanks. I made it myself. I do also love, obviously I love everything about Asami. I'm so glad she's finally here. And I also love how very forward she is. She's already going for the handhold on the first date, like 5 minutes in. Like, good for her. She knows what she wants.
She really does. She hits a cute man on the street and she says, you know what? I'm going to take him on a date.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make him financially dependent on me.
Yes. Yes.
It's so interesting because, like, the fire ferrets are, like, canonically the least important pro-bending team in the city. But both women Mako has run into has been like, I'm such a big fan of yours. And so it's just like, they must be famous on some level, right? Because, like, two people have heard of him? Come on.
maybe they have, like, a good TikTok account.
Yeah, Bolin for sure has the social media game unlocked. So they're big with like the Gen Z of Republic City, but
I think it's probably Pabu that is the real star on TikTok. If we're definitely honest.
Yeah, that's what they mean when they say they're a big fan of the fire ferrets. They mean just the fire ferret Pabu.
Yeah.
It's also probably that they've got the underdog narrative going for them, but I don't know how much that carries anymore now that the literal avatar is on their team.
I mean, I feel like Korra is kind of occupying this underdog place. It's like kind of ever since she's gotten to the city, she is just like everyone's kind of shitting on her, doubting her, claiming that she doesn't deserve things. She doesn't even deserve a nice party. Like, I think Korra is an underdog, even though she has a lot going for her.
They didn't even want her to come in the first place. She had to sneak there.
I know. It's rough. Republic City is not a welcoming place to the literal savior of humankind.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I feel like you would kind of just let that person do what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nope. You got to get her in on being an actual counter-revolutionary here. And just like horribly destroy these poor people.
I agree that it's a bad look, but okay, like there was no need for them to set this dojo up with a gigantic poster of Amon. It's like, leave some room for a shadow of a doubt if you get caught. Like, this could just be a training room. It doesn't have to be an equalist hideout. Like, I know that we're proud of being non-benders, but, like, think ahead.
They can't help it. I mean, to draw a reference that Michael will appreciate, in Persona 5, your character can, in fact, own a gigantic flag of this group that you're supposed to not be involved with at all, that you're constantly under investigation by other characters for being involved with. So I get it. Sometimes you just want to have a little fun in your own little private area.
Yeah, it's, you know, you need the vibes to be right. Exactly. You know, when you're in your training dojo, I guess. I don't know.
You need to be reminded of what you're working toward.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
In this rented out little office space that they have here.
Underground. I also really like part of the scene where, like, they have, like, a big globe, like, just a gigantic mass of water, like, to help them out on this, like, raid, which is, like, a really good idea, as opposed to, like, Katara bringing, like, a water bottle. And so, like, it's just another thing where it's like, yeah, now that they have cars, they can, like, do this sort of stuff where they, like, bring stuff around. Because they actually also did that in the invasion episode with the tank. Like, they had a big thing of water too, I think. But now it's like they drive it around and, like, just can carry water around with them when they need to go beat up civilians, like we said.
Wow, it's just like the cops here.
It is. Yeah, just horribly militarized, and I don't think anyone was actually arrested. All they did was...
Right, they just beat them up.
Exactly. I didn't see anyone being read their rights in any way. Just like, we are here to just kick the shit out of... To detain you. Yeah, that's fucked up. Sorry, Korra. Probably should have stuck with the no answer in the first place.
Yeah. Korra's like... I thought it was a great idea when she wasn't going to get involved with Tarlok, and then he said like one word to her, and he was just like, I mean, yeah, I kind of thought this would be what you wanted to do. And then she was like, it is, I'm going to do it. Like, as soon as the reporter started asking her about it, she gets so flustered under the lights because she's only seen like three faces before coming to Republic City.
Right. And I'm sure she's also sort of wanting to fight against this narrative that like Lynn is building for her, where Lynn is like, oh, you know, you suck, you don't belong here. And she just hearing that directly from Lynn and then getting asked again to do this, I like, I would.
For sure.
Just out of purely out of spite. Mm-hmm. I mean, like.
Absolutely. yeah. Go, Sam, but, go ahead.
Oh, I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah, but then we move right along. You know, they raid. Amon is not there, and so Cora's pretty fed up, and she takes to the microphone once again. I love the use of the radio in this show. Like, it's perfect for like the 20s setting that they're going for, but also it's just such a cool added layer of just like another tool they can use that like wasn't in Avatar, obviously. And the announcer that like does the previously on Legend of Korra stuff is always very funny. And so she takes to the radio, challenge Amon one-on-one.
Yeah, I like you said, the radio is great. There's a great little scene at the beginning of the episode where like Amon comes on the radio. He somehow takes over the waves, a la Team Rocket. And but this scene, as dramatic as it is, will always remind me of an edit of this where I believe it's Stupid Ho by Nicki Minaj playing. And you get the reaction of Cora, her like sweating. That's also my reaction to Stupid Ho, but in the sense that it's like my barb chip is activating.
Yes, I think actually I saw that video on Tumblr, and that's what got me to watch Legend of Korra in the first place.
You thought that was an actual part of the scene?
No, I really think so, or I don't know. I was in college.
Wait, you were like, she's just like me.
Wait, we like didn't talk about this at the start. Michael, had you watched Avatar before Legend of Korra, or was Legend of Korra your intro?
I had not really. I had seen maybe a couple episodes here and there as a youth. My sister was definitely more into it than I was. And then when it was coming out, I remember being like, oh, well, you know, this looks cool and it's more mature and this will be fun. Maybe I'll just like, so I just like watched all of The Last Airbender in, you know, more or less a week, and then all to get to Korra. So
It's all for her.
Anything for Korra.
Mm-hmm. Vibe. I love her so much, and she is amazing. Like, even in these, there haven't been bad episodes yet, so I'm not even gonna go there, but like I just love her so much, and every time she's on screen I just like light up and smile. She is perfect and amazing, and like I feel like I didn't appreciate her when this was first airing. Like, I feel like I liked everyone else so much and then didn't think about her a lot, but like going back, like Korra as a character fits directly into like the neurons of my brain about like what I like in a character.
Absolutely.
Especially because this episode in particular, she's very sensitive.
Yeah,
and you really see that.
This is a big episode for Korra having flaws, and I like that.
Yeah, it's definitely. I feel like whenever a female character is like capable in any way, there's always this like this movement to call her a Mary Sue in any way, or just like downplay them having flaws. But like, I feel like every episode we're focusing on a different flaw that Korra has, Yeah, this one, she is just terrified as hell. I will say, though, the one flaw Korra does not have is that she's always amazingly animated, always has the best faces and facial expressions.
Yep.
Yeah, I love Korra. She's so expressive in a way that like reminds me of Aang in a lot of ways. Like, Aang was that way, too. So I like that little connection between them.
Yeah. We love the Avatar.
Me too.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just going to take this opportunity to come out against Amon. I don't think he should be taking away people's bending.
I think it's very brave of you to say, Sam. Thank you for speaking up.
Thank you for supporting me. I'm not going to ask you guys to weigh in on that. I know it's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
No comment.
Wait, well, we have a lot of Amon heads out there.
Have important things to say here.
Michael, wasn't your Tumblr URL at one point like equalist rights or something?
I did make a like a one-off Tumblr post, or like a one-off Tumblr URL that was something like equalist rights, and it just had like one post that I reblogged that was like like check your vendor privilege or something like that. Mm. And I just like left it up for like 5 years.
Perfect. That's the only that can happen on Tumblr.
Right. Ugh, I miss those days.
I think, yeah.
I have been thinking about it a lot where I was just like, you know, it was just the Wild West out there.
It was. It was.
We all had fun.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
At times, yeah. Yeah.
At one point, I had to make my New Year's resolution that I was going to delete my Tumblr account sometime during that year.
During the Quora?
No, like in like 2018. That was like one of my resolutions. I was like, I got to stop using this thing.
No, no.
It did have a stranglehold on us, yeah. And yeah, that was very evident during this, like we said, the airing of this show. And for sure, I think we've talked about this before, like before, but like the Equalist movement was a big topic on Tumblr because as its reputation tells you, Tumblr is like obviously a hotbed of like social justice issues. And so a show trying to tackle that subject kind of and not doing it in a particularly graceful way was just like asking for it.
Yeah, and I feel like this episode specifically was like throwing oil onto a powder keg. I don't know how that works, but like I feel like having them I love Asami, but like people's reaction to like this non-bender character was so weird. They like hated her and they were like, she's gonna be evil. Like they like thought like immediately that she was gonna be an Equalist. And like it's like who knows what'll happen, but she's just like people immediately like hated her. Well, also because she was like new romantic blah 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 between Mako and Korra. People just did not like her right off the bat.
Yeah, that's always strange to remember that was like the first. Literally, it was "Ooh, pretty girl, let's hate her." Like that was what was going on. To the point, one of my biggest Tumblr posts was like a gif of Asami, like that just it was like keep hating or like haters gonna hate, something stupid like that. And her like doing hair flips or something, because she was just hated by people for being gorgeous.
Yeah,
which I can relate to.
Can you excavate that from the depths of Tumblr and post it on Twitter, Derek?
Oh, okay.
I think we need to revive it.
Absolutely. Okay, that's gonna happen.
2012 resurrection.
Yes. and you all better be using it, goddammit.
Oh, all the time.
And Asami Sato hair flip gif? Yeah, I'll work it into my rotation.
Good. I'm sure there's some lovely Derek learning how to graphic design typography going on in there. I'm excited to find this. Yeah, so well, what else even like happened? Like we said, this sort of like the conflict that this episode builds to is this Amon versus Korra duel. In which Amon does not show up, first of all, but then when he does show up, he shows up, like we said, with like a whole group of dudes. The whole Foot Clan is here, and like, dude, like he showed us before that he could take down fucking Lightning Bolt Zolt by himself. Like, did he really need to bring in the whole damn crew here just to clown on Korra?
Yeah, and to do all this and then not even take her bending away, it's just like, why did you even show up?
Mm-hmm. It's a little dramatic, but I mean, this, like, we talked about this before off the pod, but this episode was kind of for the gays, so, like, this big flamboyant show of power for no reason, it's very gay.
It is extremely, extremely gay. You know, he's a dramatic man, and, like, he must know that he's hitting some nerve for Korra, and just, he wants to torment her. He just knows that intrinsically.
Right, and I mean, it worked because she literally like bursts into tears when he leaves and Tenzin runs up. So,
which is, yeah, a great scene. Tenzin, this is an awesome Tenzin episode, I will say.
I love Tenzin. The more I watch Korra, the more I love Tenzin. He is very well rounded, like down to earth. And I think he's just like a really nice departure from Aang, where he's, you know, sort of supposed to be Aang's placeholder in this new world. But he's so different in so many ways, and I really like how they build him to do that.
Me too. I feel like Korra and he are both characters who I didn't appreciate as much as I now do. Like I could not even be asked to think about Tenzin when it was first airing, but now I'm like, this is the most important relationship in the show.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and both Tenzin and Korra like represent opposites of Aang in a lot of ways. Like we were saying, like Korra is the sort of opposite of Aang's hero like persona. Like she is ready and willing to be the Avatar. She has all her shit together when it comes to bending. Like that's her way of being the opposite of Aang. And then Tenzin is like the other half of that. He's like the opposite in personality. He does not engage in fun or shenanigans in any way. And so I do love that the like our two main characters here essentially are like polar opposites of Aang.
Definitely. I feel like Aang and Tenzin had really different reactions to being the only airbender in the world. Like Aang's is so traumatic and like deep, dark grief from growing up not being that way, and then like then having all of his people killed. But with Tenzin, like he has been the only airbender for his entire life other than Aang obviously and like he knows that from birth he's like gonna have to carry on the lineage of the air people and so like I feel like that leads to him being a much more serious individual than Aang
for sure. Yeah, Aang was all about like survival and just like I gotta do what I gotta do, but Tenzin is a planner. He's like yep,
yes,
this is what yeah. I have to, I gotta
determination find. Determination is Tenzin's thing.
Absolutely. He's like, I gotta find this woman voiced by Maria Bamford and impregnate her four times.
Yeah, it would never work out with Lin because he would be afraid that he would have an earthbending child.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the Beifong genes are really, really
very
strong.
Very strong, yeah.
Terrifying.
But also during the Amon fight, when Korra gets knocked out, she sees flashbacks of I feel like it's presumably we see Toph and we see Sokka, we see Aang. It's like, what's going on there?
Exactly. Yeah, this is our first peek at adult Sokka, right? And adult Aang, kind of.
I think so.
Yeah.
We see this gigantic airbender statue, but as I said, it looks bad. and so it's not the exact same Aang that we see in the flashback.
Right. I always forget about the sort of mystery box aspect of this season. So it's interesting that it like shows up here first. It's exciting to see Dilf Sokka.
Yeah. Yeah. And when is his mini series coming out?
That's exactly.
People want to know.
Literally. What is mid-20s Sokka up to?
I really want to know. Is there a Mrs. Sokka at this point still?
Or a Mr. Sokka, you know.
Or a Mr. Sokka. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I'm doing a limp wrist right now. Podcasting is a visual friend, medium.
Is he a friend of Asami Sato is what you're asking?
Yes, yes.
Are there any other thoughts on the episode before I guess we kind of talk about the rest of the book going forward and the series as a whole?
I thought it was funny when Hiroshi Sato called Mako dirt poor.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't talk about Hiroshi.
Yeah. Daniel Day Kim here to be Hiroshi Sato, head capitalist.
Wow. I did not realize it was him. He is amazing. I'm glad that, you know, the 30,000 yuans problem has been solved by a rich benefactor.
It was very embarrassing that Mako said he would get the Future Industries logo tattooed on him. Like, imagine saying that you would get, like, I don't know, the Tesla logo tattooed on you or the Amazon logo.
Yeah, Mako's trying to be the Grimes to Asami's Elon right now, I think.
I think so.
He's going to get a bunch of alien scar tattoos on his back.
Yes, he's going to name their child a bunch of characters. He's going to be in a Doja Cat video. He's going to do it all.
And he's going to continue releasing good music.
Right, and then tomorrow he'll get on their TikTok and say enforced farming is not the vibe.
Yeah. They're going to tweet at each other all the time instead of actually talking. Azealia Banks is going to show up.
I was going to say, who is the Azealia Banks here?
I think the Azealia Banks of Korra has not shown up yet.
Saving it for the spoiler section.
Yes. Before we do that, Michael, do you want to tell the people where to find your doctoral self on the internet?
Wow. Well, thank you. I'm Yas Michael Yas everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Awesome. And you can Google my name if you want to read my papers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, we do.
I was on a work call during your defense of what's it called? I forget. Wait, what's the
defense against the term?
Yeah, defense, dissertation defense.
Dissertation defense. But I hopped on for like the Q&A, and I don't know why, but I like one of the people who were asking a question was at one point like, when you leave us and you like go off into the industry and like think like when he said when you leave us, it like made me emotional.
Aww. You're really leaving? Not yet.
But just so proud of you.
Yes. You. Our baby boy. Mm-hmm. All grown up.
Dr. Baby Boy now.
Dr. Baby.
Is that Boss Baby adjacent?
I think so. It's coming.
You can find me at Ray Dierks on Twitter. Not a doctor. I will give you advice if you ask me for it. Medical advice, even. It won't be good advice, but I'll give it to you. And you can find us at BitterJurisPod on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow my other podcast, Outward on the Straits, STR8S on Instagram and Twitter. Let's talk spoilers. Pretty big here, so just want to give, 10 seconds. Not 10 seconds, but I'll just, just warning you that I'm about to talk about something that happens in the last second of the show.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I've given enough time. Thrilled that Asami is here. Korasami is life and light and good and beautiful, and I'm just so happy that we can start standing and talking about moments every time that something happens between them, because even this introduction was giving me flashes of like I feel like on Tumblr there was a post where some woman was talking about how when she was in like the third grade, a girl moved to her town and like started being in her class, and she like had a crush on her, but obviously didn't know that, didn't know what the feelings were. So she left her a note that was like, "You need to leave," or something like that. And that's like basically Korra's reaction.
It is.
I feel like Asami is the first girl of her own age that Korra has ever met.
True.
I think so, because I don't remember seeing any other ladies in the water tribe where she was
like living. Any teens at all. She was like right. In this compound where like only her masters were coming. Yeah. And then she's met Jinora and Ikki, who are her like juniors. Five. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so like Asami comes and she's this beautiful, beautiful woman. And like Korra doesn't know how to process that.
Right. Especially since we're building up the whole love triangle thing. Which is, famously a way for sort of the two corners of the triangle to mediate their attraction for each other through a socially acceptable other gender at the top. So we're, starting to get that with this whole Mako Asami date.
Yeah, and there are so many things in this season so far that have felt like the writers trying to talk to the audience, and there's a part where Aman is like, "There is a plan," or something. It really hit for me. I was like, "No, there's not. Like, you have no idea what you're doing.
You don't have a plan, and when you do get the plan, it's not a good plan. I'm sorry."
No, and it doesn't make any sense that. Not to get off of Korasami right away, but like the flashbacks when like Aman knocks her out don't make any sense. Like, there's nothing in the scene to like remind her of that specific moment. It's just meta knowledge that it's like Aman's dad.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't relate at all to her fears in any way. It's just like a little like, yep, there's other things that will happen in this season. Don't worry.
Yeah. It's just adding an extra little plot trickle where it's just like, okay, like, I don't know what that means. And if you think about it too hard, it doesn't make sense that we did this.
Yeah. But Korasami, though.
Thrilled about
Korasami,
it.
Though.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, we won't be able to really get beyond, I don't know. I feel like there's not much Korasami there for a bit. And we're going to have to really wade through the waters of Makora. Do Mako and Asami have a ship name, or did no one ever even care to give it one?
Yeah, I now that you mention it, I don't think that I know one.
I've never seen it before.
Like, that's so funny.
Because who cares? Who wants that? No one.
No, nobody does. I do distinctly remember, like, immediately shipping Korra and Asami, because obviously as a gay person watching this show, I'm sort of like looking for anything that I can possibly find, and they introduced Bolin and Mako, but they're brothers, and so that was not my vibe, even though if that is something you're interested in, there is a lot of art about it, and you can find that for yourself. Once again, Tumblr was the Wild West. But so like they introduced this girl, Asami, and so like I feel like immediately I started like looking at it through that lens, because I was a parched, desperate little boy who wanted queer representation, and you know, it panned out. In the words of Watchmen, we won.
Yes, Regina King voice. We did win.
Nothing will ever feel as good as that night on Tumblr after the finale aired. And like seeing that happen, and then also, of course, the infamous "we're popping big bottles" when Makora happens.
Yeah,
the world was never the same after that. Honestly,
really, truly, no.
At least not any of our vocabularies were ever the same.
Yeah, and it's too bad that Pepe has become a symbol for the alt-right, because that image of Pepe is such a excellent, like, it just gets the mood across so severely. It's just like perfectly drawn.
No, yeah, that specific Pepe is not associated with white supremacy in any way in my brain. Yeah, even though he is very muscular.
He is.
He's very muscly. Yeah, because everyone who ships Kurosami is either physically or mentally very strong and beautiful, much like that Pepe.
It's what is it? I always forget. It's Handmaiden and like Warlord.
Yeah. Oh God! Oh
yeah,
my God!
Handmaiden.
I forgot all about that. I just had so many flashbacks to that discourse.
Yeah, the Lord and the Handmaiden. I mean, as someone who's about to start talking a lot at length about Revolutionary Girl Utena, feel like there's a big Lord Handmaiden discourse energy that came from that show, and that show aired 20 years prior to Kurosami.
That makes so much sense. As someone who's seen 5 episodes of Utena, I can really speak adequately.
You're in for a great ride, Sam.
I know. I'm so excited. But for people who don't know Handmaiden and Warlord, it's something. I forget.
It was Feudal Lord. I think it
Feudal was Lord. Feudal Lord. Yes, that's what it is. Okay, so there was like a post on Tumblr that was talking about Ma Korra versus Kurosami, and they were like, well, Kurosami is actually the more straight relationship, because Korra has a very masculine energy and Asami has a very feminine energy, whereas Mako has a masculine energy to match Korra, so that is the more queer relationship. And they liken Korra and Asami to a feudal lord and a handmaiden or something. And, you know, it's just like, this is the level of discourse that we were all, you know, it's like, it's not the most ridiculous thing that I had ever read on Tumblr. Like, it was something I was like, oh, this makes sense that someone could believe this.
Wow, yeah. Our classic Butch Mako right there, you know. I miss it, though. It's a shame we can't find these people and bring them on, get them on the horn. Even though the infamous popping big bottles May Korra stand wasn't May Korra stand till the day that they're, I don't know, they may still be on Tumblr pounding the alarm for May Korra.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think it would be great to reach out, sort of have like an oral history of the popping big bottles post. It's still, is still so, it's like a billboard in my mind. I think about it so frequently.
And it's, you know, it'll always pop up on Twitter. You know, every few months someone will retweet, oh, remember when this happened? So, you know, it's still part of the culture.
It is. That's fandom history right there.
It absolutely is. There's no other way to put it. Are there other things that this episode was bringing to mind for us?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that we get Tarlok for the first time, who obviously will turn. Does he bend in the? Yeah, he does bend in this episode. I couldn't remember if the fact that he was a waterbender at all was like a mystery, but yeah, he does do that here. Obviously will become or reveal himself to be a bloodbender. Interestingly.
I'm pretty sure that all of the members of the council are benders, and that's like part of the issue.
That I feel like that's a thing that like they try to play into that, like in book two they're like, see, now we have the non-bending president here, that's gonna solve all the problems.
Fix everything.
But I feel like they don't really do a good job of establishing the council as like they are all benders and like that's why they get to have say here. It's like it's just like they're people and they're they each have their own little color, so we just associate them with each country, not necessarily each like bending style.
Yeah, and they really otherwise sweep non-benders under the rug for the rest of the show, right? I mean, if they don't even like bring it up with it, like say when the, you know, airbending comes back, they don't even bring up that there's a lot of non-benders who are now airbenders. So I mean, I would think that would have some say political ramifications.
Definitely.
I absolutely would. Yeah, but we also get Hiroshi, who also, we get a lot of villains in this episode. Yeah. obviously, Hiroshi will turn out to be evil, but then not evil at the end before he explodes. Which is, you know,
I mean, I think that we can talk about it when we get there, but I feel like he's still pretty evil. He just loves his daughter.
Yeah. Which we are all also evil, and we all also love his daughter.
This is true. Yeah.
I never thought that Hiroshi would be the character I relate to the most on Legend of Korra, but here we are.
He has a fantastic mustache, too. Like, Hiroshi's got it going on, honestly. And the fact that he's voiced by Daniel Dae Kim also adds a lot.
It all works.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, though, I feel like a lot of this episode is feels very book one centric, but I feel like that's just going to be the case for every spoiler section, because it's like beyond just like little hints at things, it's like obviously the structure of the show is such that we can't really talk beyond each book because they didn't know if there was going to be another book.
That's true. Other than like character development, there's no real like long-term plot implications for like most of Korra.
It's true. Except for when Kuvira is a random guard for Sien.
Iconic introduction. That is, it's so funny every time.
It's always that thing that everyone, when they're watching the show, they're like, oh yeah, that was a thing. But yeah, that's for the future. I'm all tapped out on the Voice of the Night.
Yeah, I don't.
Great episode title, though.
Sexy as hell. Mm-hmm.
I think they're talking about Daniel Dae Kim's voice.
Mm-hmm. I want his voice in the night.
I also, you know, no thoughts, empty head, nothing ringing alarms. I won't harp on it, but again, the flashback is, you know, we'll talk about it when we get to it. It's just not well done. It's fine.
So Michael, do you want to remind the people once again, where can they find you?
Once again, it's Yas Michael Yas, Twitter, Instagram, Pokemon Go, etc. That's it.
Nice. You can find me at Raindyrks on Twitter. You can find us at Bitter Jurors Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And like I said, Revolutionary Girl Utena Pod, it's in the works. It's coming. Everyone get excited and get ready to talk about lesbians.
Is it coming this week or when should we be looking for it?
It will come out the same week. It will come out the Thursday that this episode that we are on right now will have come out on. That sentence didn't make sense, but you know.
The energy is getting across. What is it called, Derek? You gotta plug it.
We
you
are plug it. The Shadow Play Gays, a play on the Shadow Play Girls, who are a central figure in the Utena lore. I am hosting with Bitter Juror herself, Christine Palin. Hell yeah, get excited for that. I've been told that my co-host has 4 pages worth of notes for the first episode alone. So that is the energy that we are coming to with the Shadow Play Gaze.
Wow. I can't wait to listen. I think it'll really be really helpful for my first Utena watch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram and Twitter. Currently watching Utena and Love, Victor, 2 equally important gay pieces of media. talking about it there. Actually, we talked about Persona 5, and I just got my PS4 out of storage, and so I'm like I'm like teetering on the edge of doing
it.
Need to consider things. And you can follow my other podcast, At Word on the Straits, STR8S, on Instagram and Twitter. Just did an episode about Happy Hour. It was a genuine delight. I hope you all check it out.
Alrighty. Thank you, Michael, so much for joining us. Congrats again on being a doctor.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. Bye, y'all.
Bye.